Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka with another episode from Sri Aurobindo's Synthesis of Yoga. From a concrete view of human life in its threefold potentialities, we come to the same conclusion that we had drawn from an observation of nature in her general workings and the three steps of her evolution. And we begin to perceive a complete aim for our synthesis of yoga. Spirit is the crown of universal existence. Matter is its basis. Mind is the link between the two. A spirit is that which is eternal. Mind and matter are its workings. The spirit is that which is concealed and has to be revealed. Mind and body are the means by which it begins to reveal itself. Spirit is the image of the Lord of the Yoga. Mind and body are the means he has provided for reproducing that image in phenomenal existence. The all nature is an attempt at a progressive revelation of the concealed truth, a more and more successful reproduction of the divine image. But what nature aims at, for the mass in a slow evolution, yoga effects for the individual by a rapid revolution. It works by a quickening of all her energies, a sublimation of all her faculties. While she develops the spiritual life with difficulty, and has constantly to fall back from it for the sake of her lower realizations, the sublimated force, the concentrated method of yoga, can attain directly and carry with it the perfection of the mind, and even, if she will, the perfection of the body. Nature seeks the divine in her own symbols, but yoga goes beyond nature to the Lord of nature, beyond universe to the transcendent, and can return with the transcendent light and power, with the fiat of the omnipotent. But in the end, their aim is one. The generalization of yoga in humanity must be the last victory of nature over her own delays and concealments. Even as now, by the progressive mind and science, she seeks to make all mankind fit for the full development of the mental life, so by yoga must she inevitably seek to make all mankind fit for the higher evolution, the second birth, the spiritual existence. And as the mental life uses and perfects the material, so will the spiritual use and perfect the material and the mental existence as the instruments of a divine self-expression. The ages when that is accomplished are the legendary Satya or Krita Yugas, the ages of the truth manifested in the symbol of the great work done when nature in mankind illumined, satisfied and blissful, rests in the culmination of her endeavor. It is for man to know her meaning, no longer misunderstanding, vilifying, or misusing the universal mother, and to aspire always by her mightiest means to her highest ideal. Who dwells in dream, the inly conscious, the enjoyer of abstractions, the brilliant, the unified, in whom conscious thought is concentrated, who is all delight and enjoyer of the delight, the wise. He is the Lord of all, the omniscient. Satya means truth. Krita, effected or completed. on these relations between the different psychological divisions of the human being and these various utilities and objects of efforts founded on them, such as we have seen them in our brief survey of the natural evolution, we shall find repeated in the fundamental principles and methods of the different schools of yoga. If we seek to combine and harmonize their central practices and their predominant aims, we shall find that the basis provided by nature is still our natural basis and the condition of their synthesis. Now, in one respect, yoga exceeds the normal operation of cosmic nature and climbs beyond her. For the aim of the Universal Mother is to embrace the divine in her own play and creations, and there to realize it. But in the highest flights of yoga, she reaches beyond herself and realizes the divine in herself, exceeding the universe, and even standing apart from the cosmic play. Therefore, by some it is supposed that this is not only the highest, but also the one true or exclusively preferable object of yoga. Yet it is always through something which she has formed in her evolution that nature thus overpasses her evolution. It is the individual heart that by sublimating its highest and purest emotions attains to the transcendent bliss or ineffable nirvana. The individual mind that by converting its ordinary functionings into a knowledge beyond mentality knows its oneness with the ineffable and merges its separate existence in that transcendent unity. And always it is the individual, the self, conditioned in its experience by nature and working through her formations, which attains to the self unconditioned, free, and transcendent. So in practice, three conceptions are necessary before there can be any possibility of yoga. There must be, as it were, three consenting parties to the effort: God, nature, and the human soul, or in more abstract language, the transcendental, the universal, and the individual. If the individual and nature are left to themselves, the one is bound to the other and unable to exceed appreciably her lingering march. Something transcendent is needed, free from her, and greater, which will act upon us and her, attracting us upward to itself and securing from her, by good grace or by force, her consent to the individual ascension. It is this truth which makes necessary to every philosophy of yoga the conception of the Ishvara, Lord, Supreme Soul, Supreme Self, towards whom the effort is directed, and who gives the illuminating touch and the strength to attain. Equally true is the complementary idea so often enforced by the yoga of devotion, that as the transcendent is necessary to the individual and sought after by him, so also the individual is necessary in a sense to the transcendent and sought after by it. Now, if the bhakta seeks and yearns after Bhagavan, why, Bhagavan also seeks and yearns after the bhakta. There can be no yoga of knowledge without a human seeker of the knowledge. The supreme subject of knowledge and the divine use by the individual of the universal faculties of knowledge, No yoga of devotion without the human God lover, the supreme object of love and delight, and the divine use by the individual of the universal faculties of spiritual, emotional, and aesthetic enjoyment. And there can be no yoga of works without the human worker, the supreme will, master of all works and sacrifices, and the divine use by the individual of the universal faculties of power and action. Now, however monistic may be our intellectual conception of the highest truth of things, in practice, we are compelled to accept this omnipresent Trinity. And here we shall pause for today and continue this next episode. And we thank you very much for listening to Auroville Radio, to Sri Aurobindo, the synthesis of yoga, and hope that your day, with any darkness in it, may be pierced by the light. Bye for now. Marlenka signing off.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.